Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Cool 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 Cool
Cool Down.
Hey, gents. Well done. Hey, I love that. That was synchronized. Lovely, to the T. In case you haven't noticed, Mawsa makes a long-awaited comeback. It's like I said, it's always a coincidence when Chelsea don't perform and Mawsa disappears. They didn't perform on the weekend, but he is here. So thank you for joining us, Mawsa.
I think Mawsa needs to tell us what he's been getting up to. I think a certain friend of the show is getting married, and you can just let us know who got married, and just so we can give him his congrats.
Oh yes, so you had mentioned it in one of the previous shows before. One of my friends, Shoro, which you know as well, Claudio.
He's not the other one. You've already spoken about Shoro, Chief.
Oh, hey, okay. So
the man's old timers. What's going on?
That was also about a week ago. Yes,
another a week ago,
footballer.
It's your first show, man. It's your first show. So obviously, I saw you in one of the pictures. So I'm just like, you must tell us, you know.
There've been so many weddings, my man. You must be specific. But this one that we went to most recently was for Thokozani Sikotlong. He's the current player at Chipa United. And a friend of ours that did the first 1v1 that we had as Go Lounge TV. Preach. So we went to go enjoy his wedding and, yeah, wish him and his beautiful wife a beautiful marriage together. So, yeah,
I thought Mosa was also going to come back with a ring on his finger, you know, because he's been gone for so long.
Soon. Keep putting it in the air, my man. Keep putting it in the air. Soon it'll be there.
Can't that only happen if you have someone, though? I'm just saying.
easy, Tiger. Easy.
All right. We do have a late comer, and he's been battling the internet, but it seems like he has made it, and it's time for the Wonga Denga Denganator to show his face. Gentlemen, say hello.
What up, guys? Internet connection is being like Man United of late now. Hey, don't know why.
It's cutting, it's struggling.
Hey, it's battling, bro. It's barely there. I even had to let go of it. I'm using my own phone data.
It's like Everton, bro. Come on, say like it's like Everton. Come on, man. Get a relegation.
Right, Selo needs no introduction, but just in case you're wondering, obviously, he is our Devils, hashtag Devils United there. And according to Wonga and Mosa, yes, struggling like the rest of the league, I suppose. But who's worse, gents? Man United or Everton? Eh? Martial. Dare we say the name Martial on tonight's show? Dare we say
it? Why?
The man refuses to travel with the squad.
He didn't want to. He didn't want to play.
That wasn't true. He clarified.
According to you, according to you, the player. So how can you believe? But why do you believe the player over the manager?
Yeah, wasn't the manager saying that he didn't want to?
The coach just arrived yesterday, guys.
He's got a point.
You see now? No. You see that one guy?
Oh, so you're saying that somehow through the grapevine, maybe Martial was just saying, look. He might want to just come on later in the game as opposed to not being there at all.
No, listen, Martial has indicated, like any player who says he wants some game time, you know, and obviously he thinks that a move elsewhere would be beneficial to him. The club hasn't come on board in terms of not allowing him, but obviously the club have come with some demands that probably a bit tricky for other clubs to fulfill right now in terms of a loan fee and to pay 100% of his wages, you know. You know, some clubs have inquired. They don't mind doing either or, but not both. You know, pay the loan fee or pay the full wages. So either or, but not do both. You know what I mean? Whereas, so obviously as well as Man United, you need to try and realize, okay, how is the best way to deal with these things? But Man United has been poor in transfer dealings, contracts, anything like that. So poorly run club. So I'm not surprised that they're doing poorly with this as well.
I mean, Silo, just jumped straight into it. Sorry, Mosa. So we might as well just go there. But before we go there, we just want to make a comment on Nevada saying, Coutinho, Coutinho, Coutinho. Anyone want to say anything there before we jump into that topic? Coutinho, Coutinho. And then we're going to just touch on the transfer window update. Mosa, you might as well tell us what you think
Coutinho.
So far about Coutinho.
Wow. You know, he came with a lot of history with your club, Claudio, when he was playing there with DVG. He did leave as one of the highest pays or fees that we saw for any of the English Premier League players ever. And he left on a very, very high note, right? We thought he was going to grow from strength to strength at Barcelona. It hadn't worked out that way. And potentially there could have been several reasons that actually got into that the dynamic. But to see him come back and join Steven Gerrard, his former player, now his manager, and actually look to be not as fit as you'd want him to be, but actually getting into the right positions and interlinking with these strikers in the way he had done with the Man United game was quite exciting. For him to come back 14 minutes and score a goal, that's the cherry on top, right? It's a dream start for any player at any club. If you can come on as your first cap and actually seal it with the goal, that's the most perfect or ideal way to actually start it off. So, yeah, I think it puts a fresh sail of wind, puts wind under his sail. And I think it's going to be great to actually see what they come up with at Aston Villa.
And yeah, and I mean, Jason jumping in with another name, Digne, also running nonstop on the day, getting cramps towards the end. What a hell of a debut
but
there.
Guys, can we talk about how poor Everton is as a club?
Let's give a little bit to Aston Villa. Yeah, I mean, coming back from 2-0 down against Man United with their new signings, hitting the ground running.
I'm talking about Digne.
Okay, yeah, this guy.
Say what you want to say, Silo. Say it, Chief. If
Silo's going to rub his head, you might as well conversation.
Is it Digne from Everton? Like, I don't understand.
We're talking about the fact that he's now wearing an Aston Villa shirt in the performance on the weekend. And but then we can go back to the Everton.
So we're trying to highlight Digne and something in relation to Everton. And then you just said that I want to talk about Everton. I want to talk about Digne, but it's okay, man. Because... Clearly, we can't talk about.
What he's saying there. It's been said. It's out there. It's in the public.
No, heck what?
Do you want to comment? Do you want to comment on the two new signings, the performance against Man United? Was it a really weak performance?
We can't speak about other clubs from Merseyside. Guys, there is another club in Merseyside except for Liverpool.
Oh, please. You think I care about the blue half of Merseyside? Come on. You can trash them all you want, but right now we're focusing on the Villa side.
You care about them.
Steven Gerrard, Coutinho, Digne,
No, man. Look, I think for me, Coutinho, I could probably... It was something I was expecting, also really hoping for, just for the headlines. I think it was a great move. I mean, if you look, obviously seeing what happened with him going to Barcelona, and I mean, you can maybe, I know one game is too early, but Coutinho, I think, needs to be sort of the main man in the team. Would have been that guy in Liverpool. They would have built, by now, they would have been painting his statue or whatever they do with those things, just finishing it off, getting ready for the unveiling. He decided to leave. And I think maybe at Aston Villa, he's, in a way, he can sort of have some redemption, in his career because he's still a top player. But I believe, he needs to be that guy pulling the strings in the team. And I think Aston Villa, is the team, I could have done any other team, but I think, I mean, Steven Gerrard there and look at the players around him. And I mean, they've got a 2-2 draw against, Man United with good players. I don't know if they're a good team, but it's a good start for Coutinho, I would say. And a good run for Aston Villa, to be honest. I think Vard would be happy.
I think also, guys, we need to recognize the guys that were found there at Aston Villa. You know, I think a guy like Ramsey, you know, the young boy, he had a very good game, you know, scored obviously his first Premier League goal, like a blind over games, had an assist and scored the goal. And also Buendia was causing problems the whole game. You know what I mean? I think so. Obviously that partnership that Buendia might obviously, build like a Coutinho and a Digne. I think also, you know, sometimes as well, a Buendia is a player who, I see as he was playing for Norwich in the Championship, but actually was supposed to be a player in the Premier League, you know? And his mind is probably ahead of some of the players in like Norwich, for instance. So I think at Aston Villa, where he's got Coutinho's on loan and then they've got a Digne and obviously other players like a Douglas Luiz who actually have a bit of quality. International players, they play for the national teams, will obviously bring the best out of Buendia. He was looking very dangerous. It was one of his best games that I've seen him play. And Ramsey, I think, is definitely one for the future. Definitely we should be watching out for him. I wouldn't be surprised if some bigger clubs sniff around, you know, in the coming years.
And even in front of Coutinho, then you have Che Watkins and Ings. It's actually very scary, right, to see that these guys, especially Watkins, he can actually look for a ball every 5 minutes. He's actually on the making defenders turn and looking for those kind of runs that Coutinho could service, which is, it's going to be quite exciting to see them put it together, especially if he is playing in that number 10 role, which he's loved and done so well with it before.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. So just a quick one then, overall impression of Coutinho's start and what you think he can do. I mean, Jason coming in with a fantastic comment saying could be a masterclass from Stevie G. Do you think it's going to be a masterclass from now till the end of the season for Villa and Coutinho being back? Anyone can take the reins. I didn't say anyone's name. I'm just thinking about it.
No. To be honest, I believe in Stevie G as a coach. He proved himself there at Rangers. I think he broke records there. Hectic form. And you can see it even in Aston Villa now. I mean, Aston Villa were not so great before Stevie G came in. And now they sort of, picking up form. Not an easy team to beat. And if I look at them as well, everything is going up. It's going up. Transfer windows come as well. And they've also now, and I think it's also added to that because it's Stevie G in the transfer window. Would they have been able to sign Coutinho if Steven Gerrard wasn't there? I think that's a big question as well, you know. Mm-hmm. And exactly. I don't want to, because if Stevie G heads that team upwards, that top four is just going to be even tighter than it has been over the years, you know. But I think he has potential to do great things with that club. If he stays there, and I mean, they give him what he wants.
Do you mean a number 2 to 4, or are you including Man City in the top four?
No, I think he's going to make it difficult, obviously, for every team. I mean, you know, you've seen, we used to be a top four. Now you're getting six teams that are actually decent. Now he's making it to probably be 8 or something. And then it just makes that thing even tighter. You know, it just makes it very difficult for teams. So yeah, I think, but definitely I think Stevie G
just a quick one. I know obviously Wonga's saying he thinks Stevie G has what it takes in order to get them to the next level, but just, I want to compare him to a Frank Lampard here in this case. Do you think if a Frank Lampard had to take charge of at Aston Villa, say he went to Aston Villa instead of a Chelsea, do you think we would have still seen him in a job at the moment? Mossa, I think this question's primed towards you, seeing as you witnessed in firsthand. Yeah.
The difference with Stevie G and Lampard in the final days that Lampard had at Chelsea is predominantly the amount of money he got to spend, right? This type of dealings that Stevie G has just done now is not as expensive or as eye-raising as some of the business that Lampard was doing at the club. And with that kind of business being done, there is pressure on the manager first before anybody else to actually then get the results, right? Yes, it was nice that what Lampard did very well was integrate the academy into the first team, and he got the boys playing some kind of exciting football for periods. That's the same thing Stevie G is doing with Aston Villa. He is getting them to play some exciting football, which actually allows him to express himself and go forward.
But Musa, how much control did Lampard have over those transfers that came in, despite Chelsea having a big transfer budget?
Yeah, right. And like Marina's still been there. The business that she's doing now still, it seems very exciting. But in my view, there's some decisions which are pretty tricky. I think, some of the decisions may have been guided by Lampard and some others may have been led by Marina, but they just did spend a little bit too much money. Once you do see headlines of 90 million being spent here, 70 million being spent there, 50 million being spent there, it does put a lot more pressure on the coach, whether he likes it or not, you know, whether he can blame it on the manager or the backroom staff or whatever. It falls on the coach to actually get the results, because even Marino will ask him, like, actually, dude, we spent 150 million, we spent 200 million on these players. Why aren't we getting the results? You can't really turn around and say, These players are not top quality if you've spent that kind of money, and that's
you know, one thing I think that Steven Gerrard has over Frank Lampard is the fact that he spent 3.5 seasons at Rangers.
Rangers, you know, the fact that 100%.
He actually spent 3.5 seasons, you know, 3 full seasons, and obviously half of this current one. You know, so at least you got an opportunity as a coach to actually learn what it means to be a head coach, you know, and actually bring out a team and say, okay, cool, guys, let's do this, let's do that, let's do this, let's do that. And then obviously discussing with the board and saying, okay, cool, guys, I think we need to sign this player, this player, this player. And obviously, which resulted in Rangers winning the league last season, which is something they hadn't done for 10 years. So I think that schooling definitely helped him. Lampard only had one season at Derby, guys, and he didn't qualify for the Premier League with Derby. He failed. I'm not saying he failed. It's to get out of the championship is very difficult. But he got into the playoffs, which is top six, whatever. But he didn't make it into the Premier League, and I think he needed maybe another season. So even like what's happening now with the rumors of Wayne Rooney potentially going to Everton, I think Wayne Rooney needs to. They need to let him still work at Derby.
Oh, he can't go there. He can't go there now.
Because especially also with this season, Derby's actually doing well under Wayne Rooney, even though they've got a 21-point points deduction, you know. Yes, they're second last on the log, right? But they should be ninth on the log, I think like 4 points outside of playoffs or something, you know. But they've been playing very well, and they're trying to, even with the whole noise of the 21 points deduction, they're still playing well. And you need to have that education of about 3 seasons or at least 2. Let's say 2 at least, you know. And this is Rooney's second season. So you look at Pep Guardiola. Pep Guardiola had 2 seasons in the Barcelona B team as the coach. You know, you still have to have that education. So I think it's what Lampard liked.
Even with Zidane and the likes. Yeah,
all
went through that same process. Yeah,
exactly. And I mean, like Nevada says, as well. Gerrard also got the good education from Klopp, and he did a similar situation before going to Rangers. So that adds up. And also, I like your Rooney sort of comparison. If you're putting him at Derby, a complete mess of a club at the moment, do you then think it is the right move to go to an Everton, who are even more in shambles at the moment?
No, not now. I think Everton can definitely be Rooney's first job, but not now. Maybe in 3 seasons' time, he could definitely take a stab at Everton. 3 seasons.
I mean,
we meant to touch
on the transfer window now, but we might as well just go straight to those topics. Benitez getting the sack, yeah, and who should be the next man in line for the Everton job? Wonga, what do you think?
Let Duncan Ferguson take it over, man. I think let him take it over until the end of the season. Rather. I think his first stint as a caretaker, he won his both the games that he coached, or he won one and drew one the last time he was a caretaker.
He put Moises Keane on, pulled him off.
Game at Old Trafford. Yeah, obviously. Exactly. So he obviously has a bit of experience of being a caretaker. I think just give it to him. He's an Everton boy. The fans will give him leeway in terms of losing games. But the most important thing is stay in the Premier League. Get a good coach at the end of the season, and then let's obviously build up.
And I agree with Musa. It doesn't have to be like he's saying, the objective would be to stay in the Premier League. So if you want to get a coach, don't rush for him. You know, like now just look for a coach. You are where you are now. Rather get a coach that you can, rather get the right coach. I mean, take your time, look for the right coach. And I think till end of the season,
is Sam Allardyce. I know you've mentioned Duncan Ferguson.
We don't need him back in the Premier League.
Guys, some people need to retire, guys. No. We don't want to see Sam Allardyce. We don't want to see Roy Hodgson, guys. Sam Allardyce, Roy Hodgson. We don't want to see them, guys.
Do you not think Benitez and Mourinho have exhausted their Premier League experience as well? Do you not think those are names that should be thrown in the same hat?
Benitez and Jose Mourinho need to go coach international teams now.
Yes,
that's what
I agree with. Since
you guys
Mourinho
are considering,
Mourinho must coach Portugal.
The same view.
Since you guys are kind of considering the old guard moving out, what about like completely fresh new talent moving in? Right, like I know there's some coaches that aren't on that potential list of managers that could take the club. But what about Peter Musimane, who's done so well with Al Ahly over the past season and a bit? What about
imagine,
that?
Could you imagine going to Everton? That place is already burning. You'll go there with paraffin, man. You'll set that place on fire. First game in. No. Like, these people don't like me because I'm African. That's what they'll say immediately.
Maybe that's what they need. Some shock therapy, boy, to fix everything.
That's the problem. That is the problem. Is that African coaches don't get opportunities in Europe. I think there's probably one in Belgium and one in France, and that's about it. I think you have to be a former player. You know, and even former African players aren't even coaches. You know what I mean? I don't even know one. Look at Drogba. Drogba's in administration. Eto's the Cameroon Football Association president. So it's tough, man. Let's Vieira's obviously leading the way as former black coaches, but I don't think Pizzo will get it. But it would be great to get Pizzo into Europe, man.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
I mean, Jason's saying they would be clever to get Potter, but I see Lampard is being put under consideration at the moment. I mean, do you think you mentioned
Potter is the perfect person. Potter is the perfect person.
Yeah. But you guys mentioned Gerrard, right? In terms of how he's gone about his approach, technically speaking. When we look at the Chelsea job that Lampard jumped at, we know how volatile Chelsea is generally as a hot seat. So it's not like that opportunity wouldn't have come for him. So he probably could have waited. Do you think this is the right thing to just jump back into at Everton? Do you think he's the man to get the fans on side?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I think you need someone who's experienced and knows what they're doing. And Potter knows what he's doing at Brighton. You know what I mean? He plays a certain way. They don't concede too much. Yes, they don't score that much, but they don't concede too much. He knows what he's trying to do, and he's trying to build a team. You know, so Potter would be great at Everton, but I think you'd have to probably wait until the end of the season, unless you probably pay a compensation. But you know,
I agree still in that sense. It makes sense. Lampard would be still trying to find out what works for him in the Premier League, because he started okay and then it went down, and he was, unfortunately, he was trying to fix it, never got it, and it just never worked out because he ran out of time. And obviously Potter, he's been in the Premier League, he knows what works. Obviously now he'd have it, but would you say, it would be a heck of a choice for him to go, because he's obviously building something.
All right, and then just to look at what Jason's saying is, like, the difference between Gerrard and Lampard is the genius move of Gerrard to get an extremely good backroom staff, and you gotta agree with that. He's got the right people, experienced people, and the likes of Gary McAllister and others around him, and that always makes a huge difference. Just going to move on to the transfer window update. We do know there's a massive Bulgarian in Fiorentina that Arsenal have put in a £50 million bid. We know that Fiorentina want to sell, but the player's saying, hang on, I want to stay until the end of the season and view my options. Wonga, any surprise there in terms of that sort of decision from the player?
Yeah, he's. I mean, I haven't seen how much, but he's doing well, as far as I understand. I mean, even the
so perhaps too well for an Arsenal. Is that what you say?
He's the leading goal scorer in Serie A.
No, I mean he's top four team in the Premier League.
I don't think it's top six team in the Premier League.
You're throwing that around now, sir. It's far from relegation fight, huh?
We're part of the big boys in the Premier League. So I think I don't think it's for him. He's obviously happy that they're looking for someone. And I mean, I wasn't here. I mean, the week when you started, but it's obviously they're showing. I mean, and I think it's good as well. I mean, in terms of what's happening, it's unfortunate for Aubameyang, but he's done his own problems. But also as Arsenal as a club, we can see that we're not relying on players. You know, you're not bigger than the club, as good as you may be. And I think obviously now this thing of them pushing for the signing is obviously a clear intent of that. But for him, it makes sense, you know. You're playing well. The players are coming off, teams are coming off you. Why rush into it now? Rather wait and have your options. But for Arsenal, it'll be, for us.
It seems like Arsenal need players considering postponement, but that's a topic.
That's what I'm saying. It's difficult. For us, it's difficult. For him, it's good. But for us, it'll be difficult. We need two centre mids
at AFCON. Aubameyang's got a heart problem now, apparently, after COVID.
Aubameyang's got more than a heart problem. He's got a mind problem as well, I think. he needs to sort himself out, that guy. He needs to sort himself out. But yeah, I think for us, but we need to get someone. That's for sure. This transfer window, we need to get someone. We can't leave there with no one. That's the truth.
Well, here's talking about someone else. Some good news for Newcastle and Nick saying that we're going to sign another player. Diego Carlos is expected to submit a formal transfer request to the Sevilla president so he can make his 50 million euro pound move to Newcastle. Gents, so this is a very good signing.
Is it euro or is it pound?
No, I'm reading euros at the moment. I can find the exact detail for you.
I think it's a good signing for them. A very no holds barred type defender. You know, he's quite physical, I think he's always going to get a yellow card in every game type of defender. It'll be a good signing for them. I think obviously your partner, the captain, Lascelles at the back. They need that defender at the spine. They need to sort out the spine. After this, they can probably try and get a centre mid, after getting, obviously getting some wood, last week. So I think it would help to get Diego Carlos, as a centre back.
And just another on the Arsenal front. I mean, Marseille have just confirmed the signing of Kolasinac there. Yeah, obviously from Arsenal. Yeah, but I mean, they can't play the game because they don't have players. But they're releasing their players or getting rid of them. That's an interesting one. Eriksen.
Yeah, but
Eriksen. Where should Eriksen go?
But Eriksen, you can't keep a guy. You can't keep a guy now because I mean you don't have players. And I mean, when the guys come back, then he's not going to play. He's going to sit on the bench. Dog, you can't hold him. Let him go.
Yeah, but for one game. Don't you have an academy? Don't you have under-17s like Aaron said there? They've got bench. They've got young players there to play.
100%. I'm of that view as well. In fact, this whole COVID thing. I mean, people had COVID.
It's ridiculous,
go
guys.
Get the team from those. Go get the players from your junior teams. I would have said that.
Like Burnley's got only played 17 games, guys. They've just had their game against Watford postponed, guys. And they had the game of the weekend postponed against Leicester. They've had 6 games postponed, guys. That's ridiculous, guys.
Yeah,
Burnley's
it is.
So behind on fixture list. And their best striker has just left. And their other good striker is obviously at AFCON. So they're hoping that Ivory Coast doesn't do well. And Ivory Coast will probably go till like deep into the tournament semifinals. So Maxwell Cornet will be there till semifinals. So they're hoping that something happens with Ivory Coast and so they can come back. But
for me, Claudio,
for them.
I would have been okay with it if they said, I don't know what the rules of the Premier League say, but if they said to teams that, I mean, if like, you know, I know COVID, it's been there it's now third year now, but you have your academy players, you even have junior players under that. If COVID hits you to the point where you don't have enough players, including your junior teams, or you had, for that reason, then I would understand, you know. But now Premier League has come to the point where it started now, even Matthew, brought it up. When Liverpool closed their training grounds, they said they were trying to miss matches, and even what's his name, Phil Neville said he should have said it earlier. Now they're talking about now, and I agree that they should have done it earlier. But now the fact that they already gave postponements to other teams, they've really put themselves in a hole. Now everyone's taking advantage of it. Everyone's taking advantage of it. And why not also take advantage of it? I think we should do it exactly what Leeds did. Yeah, I think we should have done exactly what Leeds did. Mm. Every team should have done it. It would have made the Premier League even more interesting. And the team who was at the end, the top, would have been the true winner because of the circumstances. I believe that should have happened. Now, because the guys are sick.
It's a squad game, guys, at the end of the day. And
yes,
when we mean squad game, we literally mean your first 25 players that you register and then obviously the other guys who are coming from the academy. You know, so 25 players plus your guys who are playing in the reserve side. That's your squad. If you were to have like a crisis at centre back, Liverpool played Reece Williams, who's obviously from the academy and he was playing in the reserve team. You know, they obviously played him as a centre back. You know, you play those players. You know, so for COVID, we should do the same thing. We should see your Balaguns play. I don't even know who the young guys at Chelsea are, but whoever the young Chelsea players are, you know, let them play and let's continue, guys, and let it be fair that if there's an outbreak, unlucky guys, you guys have to just obviously
honor the fixture,
unless. The COVID thing hits like four goalkeepers. If it hits four goalkeepers, then that's different as well.
Yes. But now it's too late now. So it's too late for that now. They've really allowed other teams. Yeah. And you have to be fair. You have to just be fair now. Now they're in it. So what do Arsenal use this thing here? And they said, hey guys, Let's just go file in something.
Now they're using this thing.
Liverpool dodged them the first. Liverpool dodged them the first round, and they said, "No, why can't we also dodge Tottenham?"
So they're slow learners, but they're learners, is what you're saying. That's okay. That's fine. I mean, we've got good news here for the Villa fans. Robin Olsen has completed a loan move to Aston Villa for the rest of the season from Roma, and that's officially 4 minutes ago. So that's some exciting things. Quickly, Eriksen, gents.
That's the goalkeeper, eh?
Yeah, Eriksen. Who would take Eriksen right now?
Brentford must take him.
Man United need him.
Nah, he has no space.
And I see Donny van der Beek doesn't want to go to Newcastle. Said they're too low for him. They bottom at the table.
I don't blame the two. They're too low. But I think that it would be great for Eriksen to go to the startup team.
They mid table on Man United mid table.
Are you guys serious about Donny van der Beek not going to Newcastle? Not wanting to go to Newcastle?
Why not?
Isn't that fake game news time? Martial?
Nah, he doesn't want to go to Newcastle, bro.
I don't know. I believe it. That's scary. Donny's got quite a chip on his shoulder if you see his interviews. Not in a bad way. I'm saying he's quite a confident player in his ability. So I think he genuinely would believe that Newcastle's...
He would rather go to like a Aston Villa, yeah. You know what I mean? Like a team that at least is like about to be top 10, you know, type of thing, you know. But not a team that's number 19.
Dogfight down there.
But no, Donny wants Real Madrid. He thinks his next move is Real Madrid.
Nah, but not now, man.
Literally from not playing the past 6 months, probably giving it 5 minutes in the past 6 months to going to Real Madrid is a little bit of a pipe dream, no?
It is, but I think that's generally he's had those comments, and I see those rumors have been going out there. But just any other final last transfer comments you guys want to make before we move on? Yeah.
Are the players at Man United a little bit too soft now, dude, to be honest? Because if players like Martial are coming out with those statements, Cristiano's coming out with statements of saying like if any senior players gave players advice, the players would take it on their shoulder. Donny van der Beek coming out with these type of statements like they made from gold. What is going on in the camp then, dude? Like it seems like that's a big problem, a massive problem.
From the outside there for me.
Why is Sinnoh not? Sinnoh's just taking it in. He's trying to think of a logical.
You're not there. Oh, okay. You don't know anything happening inside, Chuck.
I'm in South Africa, guys.
I feel like it's a concerning thing, man. Tell us what you
like
think.
Like when you saw those comments from Cristiano saying that the younger players aren't taking advice too well, they're actually like taking it a bit of salt.
Because I think we all know that. I think players, different generations, react differently. You know, I think Cristiano Ronaldo is from a different generation. I think his generation of players, they take criticism on board and they actually work hard. You know, so he was saying that simply that when he got at Man United, Ray Keane, Gary Neville, Rio Ferdinand, all these guys who were senior players to him, when they told him, "Hey, man, you need to work on this, you do that." Like you remember when Ronaldo got there, he used to do all those step over stuff. He cut that stuff out at some point. You know what I mean? He would do a step over, but step overs were going forward, you know, type of thing. So I'm sure someone told him that you should rather do step overs when you're going forward, when you're trying to beat a man and not just doing it like for play or type of thing, you know? So he's just saying that he's trying to obviously relay that message to the younger guys now as a senior player, similar to how Gary Neville and your Keens and stuff did it to him. He's just trying to do the same for your Greenwoods and your guys who are under the age of 23, for instance, you know. And obviously, if they don't want to listen, then at least play for the badge. Try to improve yourself. So he's just trying to impart the knowledge that he's obviously gotten from other guys when he was the type. But the thing is, players are soft now. Players are not not like him. You know what I mean? Players are different now, man. Players are soft. You know, no, man, I don't want to run too much. No, that. He was a different generation. The guys who are 30 years and above to the guys who are...
So, do you think Ronaldo will leave then? End of the season?
Yeah, if we're in the Europa League, you'll leave.
I think in terms of like Ronaldo, I think he's... what Marcelo was saying is that in terms of the players being soft, I think like you heard Ronaldo, I mean, what he said with that, was at the Sky Sports interview when he told them that, you know, third. I mean, even him saying, you could see that even when he said Man United should like finish third, he was even stretching it there. He just wanted to say number one. That's where he believes they should be. And as soon as you say that, you could see that this is something that is definitely, definitely, told those players on the pitch, you know. And I think then now it becomes a thing of, you know, him demanding it every single game. I don't know how it goes on there, but I would imagine that he's going to demand it every single game, him as a player. And then at a point it gets, you know, you know how Ronaldo is very emotional, you know, he's an emotional player. And then when he shows his emotion, now everyone's like, ah, shit, now I'll piss this guy off. Ah, flip, you know, then. And like Pillar says, different generations, you know, they don't know how to act towards it.
But you guys are saying that, like, Musa, we don't, like, Musa, our clubs don't Musa, have young players in Musa, the, in Musa, the helms.
Musa, what's your boy Shoro say?
Different.
That's Maguire and Jones should start.
No,
boy.
But the other thing is, hey, why is he saying Bruno's a fraud, bruh?
No, Bruno's not a fraud. I guys, I don't like,
why is Shoro,
he must answer. Can
you please sort out, your friends, bruh?
Maguire and Jones.
Yo, but I agree with what he's saying, that the Man United kids have no fucking balls. They want to be treated like eggs, bro. That's crazy that you guys are saying, no, that the camp at Man United, they have youth players which are soft and have to be treated with some kind of other way of giving them feedback. Yet all of our clubs have youthful players who also are pretty good at their job. But they still have to take guidance. They still have to fall in line.
Here's the difference. I think Man United also... Their younger players are paid more than the others, if that makes sense, because of the lucrative contracts. And that makes it a huge thing. That already, like, Martial came in there, got paid a lot, and he's still on that contract. He hasn't really lost his money for not performing. He's still sitting on what he wants. And I think the discrepancy between an old-school player, like, everyone says Ronaldo's disrupted Man United a little bit for more than one reason. But I think one of the reasons is due to saying exactly what you've just said. You've hit the nail on the head there with the old-school mentality clashing with the young-school mentality. And it's different now because the pressure's not coming from an external factor like a coach where they're saying, it's the coach, let's get rid of Mourinho because he's treating us illy. It's one of the world's best, greatest ever players saying, listen, you need to really shape up or ship out, and the players aren't able to handle that. And I think there's a valid point in that.
It's funny that you say that, because if you look at Ronaldo, guys, he has lost it. He's been through the generations of, he's been obviously his time. He was there with the older generation of football, and he's obviously been through this thing of the progressing. I mean, the new guys coming in. I mean, he's been there. You know, he's probably played in every big derby that you can think of. So maybe, I don't know. I really don't know what it is. It's very puzzling to understand. I'm puzzled by why the Man United guys
are finding it difficult to listen to. Have your say there. Sorry, I was speaking over you there for a second.
No, it's all good. I think at the end of the day, guys, a club can only function in the environment that is fostered by senior management and management as a whole. You know, I think that in itself, Man United's culture hasn't been great, and I think that is where now you see certain, you know, results on the field. You know, there are talented players that have come through our development. You know, Elanga played the other game, you know, and had a good game. You know, he's 19 years old. There are other players, Hannibal Mejbi is at AFCON with Tunisia. So there are players. It's just obviously now the environment of the first team needs to be, in a way that allows these guys to obviously to come in and actually obviously show their talents, you know. So let's see what happens. I think we need a reset as a club. We just thought obviously a simple way. A player like Ronaldo, people should be learning from a player like that. You know, he's obviously won everything there is to win in club football.
Yeah.
So you shouldn't be asking questions. You should be obviously learning. You know, I think one benefit that Man United might actually have right now, is the fact that Pogba is back in training. I think that will definitely help in terms of just quality in the midfield.
Do you think it will help? Or do you think it will give the manager more headaches?
It will help. The quality.
It will definitely help.
The quality in the midfield's been lacking, and he's even been saying that he's missing a certain profile of a midfielder. So I think that will definitely help him.
Could you imagine Ronaldo starting up there with a cheeky ball in the back there? He'll peel off that last man and get something.
The whole thing.
So I think, yeah, that'll help. That'll help him, yeah.
Put Roy Keane, Scholes, and Gary Neville as a technical team to keep those boys' asses.
No, no, wait. Those guys have had managers and stuff. Eh? I think, yes. They are great mentors and everything. But
Gary Neville went management.
He lost 7-1 as Valencia manager. Paul Scholes didn't finish the season. Roy Keane is good as an assistant and not good as a head coach. You've seen he's done well as an assistant at Ireland, but he's never been good as a head coach.
I'd miss their commentary when Man United are playing. To be honest, we'd need more of that, man. Where would we be without them?
Right, it's going to move over now. Oh, wait, one last thing in terms of transfer window. The name that's still up for grabs, the one that's not signing a new contract at Barcelona. We know Barcelona are trying to get the players off their books. Dembele. I mean, already being linked with a move to Man United. And this is a player that we know has a terrible track record in terms of discipline. Where is the right move for Dembele?
I wouldn't touch him. Newcastle's the best place for him.
Yeah, potentially Newcastle.
It's interesting
that you say it's good for him, but not good for. Donny thinks it's not good enough for him, but yeah.
No, Dembele. Just, yeah. Dembele is a player I can definitely see going to Newcastle. Not maybe now, maybe at the end of the season, and going to make some good money. And him being, I don't know, finding his best Dortmund form again, you know, type of thing. You know, he's shown glimpses at Barca. It's just that he hasn't shown it consistently enough. You know, I watched a game, like there was a game where Barca needed a goal and literally they just passed him the ball and he goes past this man and he crosses the ball. So that's what they're literally doing because they were depending on him so much. I think he would do well at a Newcastle. One side Saint-Maximin, one side Dembele, and then obviously in the middle, Wilson or Wood would be quite a formidable front line, you know.
All right, fair enough. Anyone else want to have a comment before we move on? He might be at Chelsea soon, according to Vards. Okay, interesting.
Hopefully not.
The one here, the title race, Man City beating Chelsea, yeah, it was a really important result that Man City got across the line here. Chelsea needed to show a little bit more fight in order to make the league slightly more competitive. Is it officially over now that Man City have beaten Chelsea?
It's done. Pelile, let's give them the parade. Let's do everything, guys. Let's just do it. What do you think? Because you are in that fantasy title race.
Fantasy? Who's saying? I'm asking the question. Why do you say the fantasy now?
I'm asking you because you're closer to the top than Musa.
Yeah, but I think let's touch on the fact as to why Chelsea didn't get the result first, and then we can ask answer the next question.
Look, before that question, though, it highlights how important that December period is, right? Like, if you're having games coming at you thick and fast, two games a week, it's a really good time and place to make a swing in the league. We've seen several leagues where it goes one way for a club. Like Arsenal have been in better positions than Chelsea going into December, but then December hits them and then they end up out of the title race completely. This has shown us as well that, you know, you could have been top of the pops going into this as a Chelsea team, but you drop literally 1 week or 2 weeks of poor performances, you're going to then see yourself because this period you can really make up quite a bit of ground in the December period. So, yeah, man, things are going to slow down. Things will get back to some sense of normality, barring the postponed matches. And to catch up 13 points, it's tough.
Guys, these postponed matches are actually rubbish, guys. Like, I just realized now that actually Tottenham could actually leapfrog Chelsea if they won all their games in hand.
I know, guys,
games in hand are not obviously guaranteed points. But I'm just saying a hypothetical of winning four games in a row. They're now number three and Chelsea's number four. You know, someone was saying that Chelsea's in the top four race. I'm like, isn't Chelsea like in the top three race? Ah, then now I realized, damn, man, guys, these postponed games are, yes, it doesn't mean you're going to win, you know, but it's still, it puts pressure when those teams start winning. And I think obviously Tottenham is obviously in the right trajectory. It's just obviously they just need to get some signings over the line.
Yeah. It helps the coach a lot, right? It buys him time. He's a new manager at the club. He gets more time to actually figure out
his work on the squad, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think it's a valid point. If you're looking at Tottenham right now with those games in hand, more time to prepare for Conte. It hasn't lost in five games.
Imagine Eriksen goes there for 6 months.
Well, he's saying it's welcomed. He's saying he's already opened arms, saying Eriksen must come back home and he's got a place to play. That could be the thing that sparks Kane a little bit. Maybe exactly what Kane needs, an old friend.
Oh, bruh. The old band, we're back, bruh. Kane, Ali, Eriksen, and Son. Those guys are dangerous under Pochettino. Flip, right? Yeah, no, that was a dangerous team, man.
But what has happened to Kane so far? Because, wow.
No, he's back. He's back on form now.
He's scoring again, and that's a big worry for the rest of the league and the guys in the top four. And that's also why they're really upset with the Arsenal postponement. The Arsenal postponement really threw them off because they're ready to make sure.
They've got like seven games in hand. I don't know why they're sour. What the heck? They're the first ones who started this thing. I don't know how they can be sour.
They heard about the bet. They know if Arsenal lose, you got to bleach your hair white. Also, Mosa, what's going on with Lukaku there, Chief? Why did you?
I don't have to bleach my hair this year.
So the man gets put on bench.
It's clear that I don't have to bleach my hair this year. It's so clear. I'm so thankful.
Your beard, because you got nothing there.
I'm growing this hair here for the beard.
Can you stop with the jokes, man?
Okay.
Shut up.
All right, just comment on the Liverpool fantasy-esque trying to be in the title race here. Gentlemen, anyone here, if Liverpool go on a run, and they do what they've done in the past when they have somewhat challenged. I mean, it's very unlikely. Where is realistically City going to drop points? That's the real question. It's not whether or not Liverpool go on a run, I think. It's where they drop points.
Yeah, it's not whether or not Arsenal get a run as well. Because we also close to Liverpool. How many points? Six. So we're in the same boat as Liverpool. We're all in the same boat.
You're 10 points away from Liverpool, man.
Liverpool is with us.
Behind Liverpool. I mean, you want game in hand on Liverpool and 10 points behind them. Come on, Mwanga.
We're there.
Top four.
See what happens when you languishing at the bottom of the half. It really does something to your head. So as soon as you start seeing it all hope, you overestimate that hope. I think that's what the classic case of brain fog there, Mwanga. Eh? Over-optimistic.
When you sign Dusan, maybe things will happen there.
Yeah.
And it's so tough to see, like, Liverpool honestly getting that run going, right? Yes, you guys might pull some results, but without Salah, Mane, Naby Keita, the odds are...
I mean, you say that, but we did... Look, it was Brentford, but we won 3-0 on the weekend. It was very comfortable without those players. So, you know, maybe it's exactly what they need in terms of the players not being there. Look, the results against Arsenal last week was shambles, absolute shambles. They had a chance to obviously put to bed, but it also worked in their favor. Let's also not forget that the man getting sent off actually gave it gave Arteta the right to make sure his side could play like a Burnley and just pack the back and say, we're going to fight for this now. And the Arsenal fans aren't going to turn on you. Everyone's going to say, well, let's grind this out. Whereas if you were doing that with the full 11 aside, you think they would have been happy with that? As an example, asking, do you think they would have been happy with that?
Yeah, but you guys are going to keep having to face those challenges, right? And the players that are missing from your squad are your talisman players. So that's the difficulty for Liverpool. You need those players to come onto the forefront when things are going down, when you are finding it difficult to break through the 10 men of Arsenal. You need Salah and Mane to bring something, pull a rabbit out the hat for the team to kind of galvanize everybody and get the result, which is...
I think what definitely works for Liverpool is the winter break. That little 2-week window where there'll be a FA Cup game and then obviously there will be no Premier League game. So this is the winter break. So obviously this weekend's games are the last round of fixtures until the 8th of February. So that will definitely, that's what's helping Liverpool. And I think that's what's helping Liverpool. That's what's helping all teams that are reliant on African players. So obviously your Burnley's is definitely going to be benefiting like that.
Arsenal.
Crystal Palace, Arsenal, obviously, Partey and Elneny, and obviously, Pepe will come back. And then, Crystal Palace have Zaha, Ayu, obviously, at AFCON, Kouyaté as well as at AFCON. So they've got three players that are at AFCON, they'll benefit as well. So there's a couple of teams that just need, just to hold on this weekend, get a draw, get a win, or don't lose or whatever type of thing. And then I think, 8th of Feb, I think, AFCON's final is probably that weekend. So whichever team is in the final, won't have their place, but then they'll have them for the next game. So I think, yeah, you guys should be sorted. Chelsea, I don't think you guys are really worried with Kepa. Kepa has been decent in the League Cup this season, right?
I feel like if Mendy was there, that was going to be a save against KDB, though.
Yep.
Yes, he's taller. He's taller. He's got a larger wingspan. He's got a larger wingspan. So I think his arms are a bit longer. I don't know. I can't say. I don't know for sure.
It could have been 7 points the difference right now, my man.
Hey, but that was a strike.
Yeah, but I mean, on that note, Jess, AFCON final six or Feb. But, so in essence, it's actually, if you're looking just from a Liverpool perspective, it's two games. Okay. It's the game they played this week, this Thursday against Arsenal. Then, of course, the Crystal Palace game. And then, like Cedric said, so technically, it's only those two games. So
I know we were past the transfers, but I just thought about it now. What's his name? The situation at Dortmund with Haaland.
Yeah, aren't they forcing him out right now?
They're forcing him to make a decision on his future, yeah. which is for me is fair because if he must go, they must have a plan. You know, I mean, they must know what they're going to do afterwards. So they're saying they're telling him that he needs to make a decision now, and he wanted to do something like what Dusan said.
His release clause is €75 million in the summer. So I don't know if they're trying to say that maybe they could get more money now, but that doesn't make sense because €75 million, the release clause.
But is it though? Because they're saying then why all of a sudden they're being quoted for like €200 million plus? Because they're saying that's not actually the release clause, which is quite interesting.
Oh, because that's the thing is that's what the rumors were. So maybe that rumor is not true, right?
True, yeah, but if you think about it, like he's the main striker, and I mean maybe they just want to also. You know, say like, guys, look, if you go, we sort it out now. But my question is,
until 10 years from now, they know exactly who they're signing. They got like a long list of players here.
My question is, who would be interested in a player like that?
In Haaland?
In the Premier League. That's what my question is.
I think Man City in the Premier League, and then Real Madrid or not Barcelona, but I think Real Madrid or Man City.
Yeah, what I'd do to sell Lukaku right now for that player.
Barcelona will take another loan to get Haaland in. Let's put it that way. Just a quick one.
They will sell Messi's Ballon d'Ors that are sitting in the museum to get Haaland.
right, just a little AFCON update before we go tonight. We're going to close off with this section. Who's been following this? Who wants to update us?
I watched a nice game between Guinea and Zimbabwe before the show. Nabi Keita scored a nice goal. Our neighbors, Zimbabwe, obviously they couldn't qualify. They won 2-1 against Guinea, but they couldn't qualify. In that game, guys, first female referee at an AFCON. She refereed the match for Rwanda. She refereed very well that game, guys. I can't fault her in anything. She just dropped the yellow card. That's the only thing I can fault her. But otherwise, she did a very good job in that game. But I like the fairy tales. You know, I think we often have fairy tales at these continental showpieces, and the fairy tale of Equatorial Guinea and Sierra Leone. Obviously, Equatorial Guinea beat Algeria. Sierra Leone drew with Ivory Coast 2-2. What a blunder from the goalkeeper!
I want to discuss that blunder though, Celo. That blunder from the keeper, was that a full-on blunder or did the pitch play its part there?
Because it was almost like you were sliding. If it was like a level ground, right, it would have been that he would have slid nicely. He would have slid and then still held the ball, but he jerked. Because he hit and then made that divot in the ground, and then obviously he popped up type of thing. If that makes sense. What do you think, Musa? You saw that incident. What do you think?
I saw it. Yeah, and I think it is down to the pitches, man. Like there've been, I think, two or three stadiums where you see the pitches aren't up to the standard that you'd expect. You know, like they have had some time to prepare for this, even had delays to prepare for the tournament, but. Yeah, I think sometimes you can blame the pitch for what has happened in that incident at the goal.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
and no, as you were about the fairy tale, so as we lose Wonga, Musa, yes, yeah. What did you want to add there?
I was even going to add that even these pitches, they're sometimes putting some of these, because there are a lot of stars actually playing at the AFCON tournament right now. There's players that have been, you know, some of Europe's best talent actually playing in AFCON right now. And some of them are left wanting in certain instances, right? They haven't been able to shine to the levels that they are expected to shine to or should be shining at. And I think it sometimes comes down to the conditions, right? Like if you are playing on a beautifully laid surface that's kind of like cut with scissors week in, week out, and you're coming to some pitches where you can actively see the ball bobbling around when these guys are trying to play, it affects with their confidence, it affects with their ability on the day. And we've seen it now that like some of the players haven't been able to hit all cylinders so far in the tournament. Players like Salah, who's just recently scored, but like Sadio Mane, these are very, very like established players in the African context who haven't been able to actually shoot at fire on all cylinders at the moment.
No, true. Yeah, I think if Claudio.
No. Yeah.
No, I think a player like Zaha, when I watched Ivory Coast, so this game they swapped their wingers. The first game they played Kone and Gredal, who's the joint captain. So they played Pepe and Zaha, and Zaha is a very he wants the ball by his feet type of player. You know, he wants to do the skill, he wants to do this, whatever. He won them a penalty, you know, obviously then which Casey missed, but I could see sometimes he's not calling for the ball as much as he would call for the ball when he's at Palace. But I think it's just because you don't know what the ball's gonna do when you're about to do a step over. You know, you're gonna do a step over, then the ball's gonna bump and then it's gonna hit your calf, and then now you look like a fool, you know.
Yeah. So you're right. Also, to be fair, he's grown up playing on the perfect pitches his whole career.
Exactly.
It's not the inverse. It's not an African player coming from Africa used to this versus. Yeah, he seems very uncomfortable, but he's not making runs in behind either, which is also quite interesting.
He's not, but he made a good pass for Sebastian Haller for the goal, which obviously contributed. But I think if you get him on the main stadium in Cameroon and Yaoundé, where the opening game was, I think that's where you can actually probably see players playing very well, because that's the one pitch I remember that's got a nice surface. You know, Cameroon has benefited; they've scored the most goals. Aboubakar has scored 5 goals in the tournament, but that's because they're playing on the best pitches every single game, so they're not killing themselves. They're making sure that they are sorted. You know, but I think it's also interesting how a lot of younger players now, or they've been trying to be convinced to play for their African origins, you know. I look at the player who's playing for Guinea today, Elish Moriba.
They're being sold false dreams there, that you no, just stay where they are.
Obviously it depends. I think it depends, obviously, on a personal level, but yeah, they could be sold. But Elish Moriba, who obviously plays for Leipzig, comes from the Boston Academy. He's playing for Guinea the tournament. He's 19 years old. Hannibal Magebury, who plays for Man United. He's from our academy, and we got him from Monaco at the age of 15. And he obviously could have played for France, but he decided to play for Tunisia rather. And he played in the Arab Cup and did quite well there. So it's been an interesting way where I've been seeing these younger guys who are actually being recruited to play for their ancestral countries, you know, instead of the countries that they were born in.
Mm.
Would have been interesting if Ansu Fati was playing for, I think it's Guinea-Bissau. It would have been interesting if he was playing for Guinea-Bissau. But I think, yeah, some players, the bigger European countries convince you too quickly before you can even think of going to Africa.
Well, I suppose you feel, you know, committed to those sort of countries because they're the ones that, in essence, made you. Or are making you. So there's some sort of loyalty there. But overall, AFCON, gents, who are you rooting for this tournament? Who do you think? I know, Cedo, you've touched on the underdog more, so you haven't commented much. Who do you think is going to take this one?
I had high hopes that Egypt would come to the tournament and, show the world that they are the Pharaohs, and they, with Mo Salah being their talisman, actually carry that form from the English Premier League into the AFCON tournament. And then, yeah, you see the results because they, in my view, that's a team that's super well balanced. It's got a lot of attacking prowess and some really strong defensive stability, but they just haven't looked the part, man. They haven't looked as energetic as a lot of the other African teams, and they haven't been having like combination play in the right areas to actually menace. So, yeah, I was going into the tournament thinking Egypt should be the team, but that has quickly changed, and that quickly changed after the first game that they played. So, I'm still on the fence about them. I think teams like Ivory Coast, Senegal will probably be there towards the end of the tournament, given their pedigree and the class that they've shown so far. Nigeria has been one team which has surprised the living socks out of me. They came to Egypt team.
Is that a new brand of sock there, Mosa? Where are you getting living socks from, Achif? There's socks what? Living in your feet. I don't know. You said you're living socks. What's going on there?
Yeah. Sorry, but yeah, I've got socks everywhere. But you've got happy socks only. You must get living socks, Chief.
Living socks, okay. Maybe socks. Make me run faster.
But I agree with him. Nigeria guys. Sure. Nigeria have been so impressive, man. I think, and I actually didn't even realize the fact that I had thought that Victor Osimhen was still in the squad, but he played for Napoli yesterday. So that's obviously their big striker. But yeah, Iheanacho up front, and obviously Ighalo, the old man, is on the bench. But still, man, I think they've got a solid team. Their right back, Aina, who plays for Torino, who used to play for Fulham, good right back. Obviously, Wilfred Ndidi in the centre mid. Iwobi's on the bench. Like, these guys have Chikwueze, who plays for Villarreal, starts. So they've got a well-balanced team. They've got quality in the right areas. I think Salis, their left back, I forgot what's the name, but he plays for Porto. Oh, you said you're a Benfica fan, sorry. So he plays for Porto. The left back plays for Porto. Let's see what happens. I think the business
is your money on them now, Silo. Who's your money?
It's on Nigeria. It's on Nigeria. It's on Nigeria, guys. It's on Nigeria. I'm disappointed in Algeria. Mahrez said that he wants to go back to Manchester City. He's seeing that they're having too much fun. So I think that they're not
going to. But can you see that? I think that's the issue that AFCON face. It's exactly that. These players now, they've come from this, and they get used to the lifestyle in Europe and the conditions there. So when they come back, it just feels like, so unnecessary for them just to come back here. And that's the overall impression I get.
Probably just difficult, right? Like, the transition is quite difficult, dude. You're playing.
Because it is quite jarring. It's a stark contrast. That's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. You're playing in 5 degree weather. You're traveling either through planes or air conditioned buses from camp to camp on nice highways and the like.
And they have Wi-Fi.
Now it's 30 degrees. You have to travel, catch buses. It's remote. It is an experience which is a little bit more unique and different compared to what they're used to. And it takes some time to adjust to that for anybody, right? Even if you had grown up in Africa and started playing in Europe for the past 3 years, the moment you come back, you're going to have to adjust. You're going to have to acclimatize. You're going to have to get used to the way things are at the moment. And that's, I think, what's actually happening to a lot of these players.
But at least obviously European clubs don't have to worry about the next AFCON. They did announce that it's going to be in Ivory Coast in June, July. I think that I wonder if that's off the bat of the fact that the World Cup is in November, December. You can't really have an AFCON in January, February again in next year, because obviously AFCON is 2021 and 2023. And obviously, this is 2021 AFCON.
But why the 2 years, guys? I want to ask you, what do you think about the 2 year gap? Why should there be an AFCON every 2 years?
It's they say it's because of the amount of countries there are in Africa.
Yeah, and I think it's actually a cool model. I think even the World Cup is trying to push towards every 2 years, which is quite exciting.
Yeah, the World Cup want to make money. That's the difference.
FIFA
But AFCON has always been every 2 years, you know. We've always had it.
Yeah, but I'm asking why. Like, why, what's, if you're waiting 4 years, it becomes even more prestigious. It gives countries more time to prepare, gives them to work with a certain squad. The 2 years, and I think it's arguably not been a fair reflection on everything because of how, I don't know. What do you guys think?
They said it's more of the thing of trying to give exposure to a lot more countries, and because there's about 55 countries in the continent, and so on and so forth. But I do agree. I think, a 4 year could definitely, be beneficial, and it will obviously not worry European clubs if it does happen in January as much when it is every 4 years. But if it's every 2 years, you worry like, oh, Philip, I'm about to sign Yves Bissouma, but he's from Mali. What if Mali's going to play every 2 years? So every 2 years, I want to have Yves Bissouma for a month, in the midfield, you know, type of thing. I'm just thinking of a player who obviously trying
to. But also,
to
what about
club.
The psyche of the players? So, for example, if you know it's only every 4 years, you're really going to work your living socks off in order to try and make sure your team get it. You know what I'm saying? If it's every 2 years, you go, we didn't quite perform well now. I'm not performing
we'll come
well.
Back.
I'll come back. Yeah. Because I've still got time within my career. Do you think that plays a part?
Yeah, it could definitely.
For me, it wouldn't. It still means a lot to actually have the World Cup under your sleeve and to have that as an accolade. As much as it does mean for like the Champions League, right? They play the Champions League every season, but that is still a very prestigious occasion when it happens. It's not like if it were happening every 2 years and they moved it down to a season, we'd see it as less prestigious.
No, but to go back to your point, to the Champions League, it's same conditions, same lifestyle. The money's far greater. Of course, there's a lot more prestige. More eyes are watching you all the time. That you can feel the prestige. I'm saying if you're doing it in Africa, do they really feel the prestige? Do they feel like the whole world's watching them? Do they feel that significance that they would feel if they were in the Champions League final?
I know from my perspective, a lot of South Africans have been watching the AFCON quite closely, even though we haven't been involved in the AFCON. And that shows how prestigious it is in my view, right? I'm not too sure in South America or the rest of the world how the reception has been to the tournament, but it's quite amazing, right? Like at this point in time, we've probably got 60-70% of Africa or of the world's best talent playing in Africa for the African teams, and that's exciting to watch from my perspective. And if it were happening every 4 years, yes, it would still be exciting, but it doesn't lose its quality and its appeal if it does happen 2 years.
Question on the quality. You've already touched on the fact that the conditions of the pitches and stuff aren't quality. Selo came on previously and I asked him to be fair in his assessment of the games that he had watched, obviously prior to this moment. And the assessment of the rating of quality was between 4 out of 10 to 6 out of 10. In your unbiased opinion,
it's better now. Second round was much better. I think, as I said, the warm-up games, no warm-up games, second round, more goals, more quality, definitely. I can, nippy, you can see players actually trying to play, you can, but the first one, sluggish, you don't know who's this guy. Yeah, it's just a bit haphazard. But Musa, what's your
and what I can highlight is it is this region's type of football, right? It's a lot more physical. It's actually crazy to see how physical and demanding the actual football is in Africa. It's very, very physical. I can only picture what it'd be like if South Africa were to have qualified, playing against a Senegal, playing against the Cote d'Ivoire, playing against a Morocco and Egypt. Those are teams that have got some of the biggest athletes in the globe, right? And the style of football that they play, yes, it might not be fluid because the pitches aren't as clean cut, but there are some nuances where you're seeing where these guys are actually like they adapting and actually outperforming or really performing really well in what they're doing. So there is a lot of quality to be seen on the field every day. It's just, yeah, yes, the quality of the pitches aren't as good, but the players still have to adapt, right? Like even if you do play in Italy and the pitches are wider for an English team, it is a little bit challenging. They have to adapt and show that they've got their tactics, they've got their awareness, they've got their approach set, which is something that is nice to see, and nice to see how these players adapt with the tournament as it progresses. Players,
right, final and that's question. Probably, yep.
Hello, I was saying ahead, that's yep. probably why it was so difficult for players like Mane, like Sané, like Salah to come in and just hit the ground running, right? The adapting was quite a bit. It's quite a lot for them to acclimatize and get ready for a tournament of this nature. If it were the World Cup, they'd have a month at least to actually be in camp, to acclimatize to the environment, and then to get a sense of how everything is, how warm it is, how humid it is, what type of football the country is going to play, how they're going to adjust their tactics for the conditions that they're going to face,
All right, and on that note, gents, I'm going to ask one question. It's going to be a quick fire. Kedaj being the coach of Egypt, is he the man, the right man for the country? Yes or no? Cyril? Of course, he's assisted by Roger Nassar. That's all I'm saying. Yes or no?
I'm going to say no because of what I saw in the first two games. I'm just going to say no.
Right? Yeah. There we go. Cyril's getting better at quick fire answers. There we go.
So no from me as well. Egypt have underperformed.
Right. And on that note, that's how we're going to end tonight's show. Gentlemen, thank you for being
such a
on
tough question.
Cool down.
Yeah. Why are you going for Kedaj, Chief?
I'm not. I'm just thinking, you know, Egypt top side. You've got Salah there. I'm just asking the question, like whether or not you think he's good enough. That's all I'm asking. Because you were saying, up. You know, you're surprised. Yeah. Anyway, gentlemen, final thoughts. Quick, final thoughts.
Ah, oh, man. I think obviously, yeah, there's some football tonight. I think obviously Chelsea are playing. I think it'll be good to watch some midweek football. Man United are playing tomorrow, so I'm keen to watch those teams play.
I haven't said anything about Lukaku, but I think it's important that I vent, man. Yo, guys, I'm not gonna have to dye my beard or bleach my beard because his performance has been so shocking. But it's even gone a step further, where even now he's bringing some elements from my coach. My coach is even telling him kak on the sidelines and stuff, dude. It's now like, man, he's actually. For me, my concern at the beginning of the entire process of getting him to sign to Chelsea was the fact that I don't think he's that much better than he left the English Premier League, and I don't know if all the improvement that everybody's ranting and raving about will be seen. He has lived up to that so far, that he hasn't actually improved miles ahead of where he left. He's actually kind of the same player, same mold. The league was just different before. But now he's bringing his comments to a team that was faring very well without those comments. It never needed that type of antics in the change room or the locker room. And I don't appreciate it at all. I think if Tuchel did the right thing by saying, okay, you feel like you're not playing, you feel like the system's not for you, go and play some more. Show people why it's actually embarrassing to have him sometimes on the field. And that's where I'm at. Like, it's actually, it's gotten to a point where he's been given a good opportunity to show his value. He's had support from the club. He's the one that got his own injuries, and then he felt as if the club wasn't supporting him. They weren't building a model around the way he plays and the likes. That's bogus, bruh. I'm so ready for this guy to buy. You guys can buy him back.
Who?
Who? Lukaku. Aside, really?
You can buy him back.
Us.
You can buy him back.
We let him go for a reason, bro.
Fuck. We paid you guys money. Just the money that we paid for him now, some of it got back to you guys for that
100%,
fucking.
Thank you.
Fucking hell. You guys, what a scam.
definitely no loss, no love lost there from also the gods to Lukaku. Gentlemen, remember, if you don't know what to be
cool. Be cool.